This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. The World Economic Forum's Global Gender Gap Report is an annual benchmarking exercise that measures progress towards parity between men and women around the world. The results from the 2016 report have just been released, and joining me now to examine the findings is Teal Leopold, the project lead of Education, Gender and World Systems Initiative at the World Economic Forum. Teal, thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
So just to give some context to our listeners, could you give me a quick history of the Gender Gap Report?
Sure. So as you already mentioned, the Global Gender Gap Report is our annual benchmarking exercise measuring the state of gender parity around the world and progress towards gender parity. This is the 11th annual edition of the report. So we have been at this measuring for the past 11 years, every year, how the world is doing and the rate of progress towards gender parity.
How many countries are involved?
So this year's report, we are looking at 144 countries, which between them represent about 98% of the world's population and also about 99% of the world's GDP. So we're trying to have really universal coverage of all countries in the world if possible.
What are the distinguishing features of the WEF Global Gender Gap Index? Because there are many other indexes as well. Two that comes to mind is the UN Gender Inequality Index as well as the Economist Glass Ceiling Index.
So I would say our index has two really distinguishing features. So the first is the way we understand gender parity is that we're measuring it actually across four dimensions. So we're looking at the economic dimension, economic participation and opportunity and equality in that for women and men. We're looking at educational attainment, so the education sphere. We're looking at health, and we're also looking at political empowerment as well. So our index has these four dimensions. In addition to that, we're not really looking at countries' absolute levels of economic development, but we're rather really looking at equality of access and equality of opportunity for men and women in every country at whatever level of economic development it might find itself. And what that means in practice is that you might find in our index that a few countries that you wouldn't typically expect at the top of such a global ranking, such as, for example, Rwanda, which has been doing really well over the past couple of years, find themselves quite highly ranked, since despite perhaps a more modest level of income in that country, they have really avoided gender-specific inequalities and disparities in their country as these countries grow.
Yes, Rwanda is a really interesting case because just going through the trauma of a genocide in 1994, they have been in the top 10. But let's take a look at this year's results. What are the characteristics or traits of top performing countries, countries which do really well in their gender parity?
So if we look at the global results for this year, unfortunately, what we're actually finding for this year is that the progress towards gender parity this year has really stalled. And we're finding that it would take another 170 years to close the gender gap in the economic sphere. One reason why that finding is coming about is that a lot of progress that had been made over the last 2 years in for example, the education sphere and in health and also in the economic sphere as well, has led to some good progress over the last 2 years. But what we're seeing now is that there really has been a slowdown and in some cases, in the instance of some countries, even a reversal in this progress in the economic participation of women and opportunity for women, specifically in the economic sphere. So against that backdrop, the countries that are doing well in our index are often still those countries that are also doing particularly well in the economic sphere. So they really have managed to provide a lot of economic opportunities for both men and women in the economy and in the labor market. And therefore, also they make use of the full talent pool that these countries have. And while there are many factors of this, and of course, this is also country specific, one feature that a lot of our top performing countries share is that they have really managed to come to an arrangement where both paid and unpaid work, and also, for example, paternal and maternal childcare provisions and so on are quite equitably shared between men and women.
Is that an explanation of why there has been a sort of regression?
That is certainly part of the reason that this progress in the economic sphere, while it has continued in some countries, and those countries continue to do well, incidentally, so Malaysia this year, for example, has also actually made a lot of progress compared to last year in the economic sphere. But however, if you look at the world as a whole, a lot of countries' progress in this economic sphere has stalled. There's really two reasons, I think, why we're seeing this. So one is still a little bit the after effects of the global economic crisis of 2008, where in a overall less dynamic economic environment, it is of course harder to make any sort of economic progress, and so including of course progress that would help to reduce these disparities as well. So the environment has become tougher for any kind of progress. Especially in some of the richer countries that have been doing well on this in the past, in say the European Union or North America. So, however, that is really only part of the reason. Another reason really is more structural, and that is to do with the fact that, so as I already mentioned, a lot of progress has been made, for example, in the education sphere over the last decade, and actually in the majority of countries now we're seeing full gender parity when it comes to educational attainment and educational opportunity between men and women, but then this educational attainment does not translate to the same number of women also taking high-skilled professional jobs and to gender parity in the professional sphere. So the investment that has been made into women's education does not translate to the same degree into the economic sphere. And that is again to do with perhaps in the last few years, a lot of the progress that has been made from a lower base. And now, as the world has seen some progress, now we would really need to start to tackle some of the more structural inequalities there, such as I already mentioned, for example, the fact that women in most countries actually continue to work longer hours than men. But the majority of that work still continues to be unpaid in many cases. And so there are certain structural factors that from here on will make it certainly a little bit harder to accelerate this progress in the economic sphere. So more efforts will be needed there.
So I wanted to pick up on the fact that you said it would take 170 years for full gender parity to happen if you were to extrapolate the data from this year's gender gap report. But what does full gender parity means?
Right. So the first thing to note here is that this 170 years that we're mentioning for this year is we're not. This is not a foregone conclusion. This is not this is not fate. So rather, this is, as you mentioned, based on the current projections of the rate of progress in different countries. At the moment, at the current speed of traveling, that is what we're seeing. However, of course, we do very much believe that it is in countries' powers and into the power of economies and individuals to accelerate this progress. And so we are reassessing this every year. And so it is not sort of a unchangeable fact. That's the first thing to emphasize. And certainly, I think, you know, we would obviously all like to see gender parity in our lifetimes. Incidentally, in the East Asia and the Pacific region, actually progress is a little bit faster. So here we project 111 years compared to the 170 for the world as a whole. You mentioned what do we understand by
correct?
What do we mean by this full gender parity? Mm-hmm. So what we really mean is it is basically really equality of opportunity between men and women in these four fields that we mentioned. So
how do you measure the quality of opportunity? Because you're trying to measure access to opportunity, right?
So
if we look at the constituent components of our four dimensions, so we have a number of individual factors that we look at. So for example, in the economic sphere, we are looking at equal labor force participation of men and women. We are looking at wage equality for men and women in the employment. We are looking at men's and women's income share in the economy as a whole. We're looking at the share of professional and technical and skilled roles held by women and men. And we're looking at also more senior executive roles and the equality at that level between women and men. And in education, we're looking similarly at both basic literacy and then equality across the different attainment in the different spheres of the educational sphere. For health, we're very much looking at healthy life expectancy, as well as sex ratios. Certain countries, such as China, continue to have distorted sex ratios at birth. And we're then in the political sphere, we're looking at women's equal participation in political decision making. And we're measuring that by, for example, the share of women in parliament. That, for example, is one of the striking things about Rwanda. So Rwanda has 64% of Rwanda's members of parliament are women. And of course, you can imagine that will have a certain impact on the kind of inclusive policies and so on that get made in such a country. And then we're also looking at equality at the ministerial level and at the most senior levels of government as well. So that is kind of the detailed level of the index.
I'm speaking today to Tu Lopo, the project lead of Education, Gender and Work System Initiative at the World Economic Forum. And we're talking about the World Economic Forum's Global Gender Gap Report 2016. We'll talk more after the break. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. On the show today, we have Tu Lopo, the project lead of Education, Gender and Work System Initiative at the World Economic Forum. We're talking about the World Economic Forum Global Gender Gap Report 2016. So before we left off, you were talking about how individual countries, some are doing better than the other, and you mentioned that Asian countries will take lesser time to achieve gender parity based on current projection. And I, besides Rwanda, which you mentioned, I was also interested with the case of the Philippines, which is the highest ranked country in Southeast Asia, the number 7. Mm-hmm. And based on the example of Rwanda and the Philippines, there are many ways to achieve gender parity. It can be legislated as well, for example, in the case of Rwanda.
Yeah, there are certainly different pathways. And I think what we believe is that, so we already spoke before the break about one thing that makes our index distinctive is that we're not starting from an assumption that you need to have a very high level of economic development to achieve gender parity. In fact, you could easily argue that it is often the other way around, that having a more inclusive labor market and really making use of the full talent of both men and women in your country will obviously contribute to economic growth. And that has been shown by a wide range of studies beyond our index as well. But so then what we see in the four areas that our index is covering, so the economy, education, health, and the political sphere, that often progress in one of those fields also then accelerates progress in the others. So for example, certainly progress in political empowerment then often leads to policies that are more reflective of the whole diversity of experience that a country has, and therefore also then often promote better performance in the economic sphere as well. And of course, any progress in any of those fields really will be severely limited, for example, if you don't also make progress in education. So I think our message here very much is, you should not wait or you should not expect that you have to wait to have a very high level of economic development to start working towards gender parity, and rather working towards gender parity at whatever level of economic development a country finds itself at can actually really accelerate the country's progress as a whole. And so, and then secondly, really, you can make progress in these different fields, and they will kind of feed off each other in a virtuous cycle. That is why in some cases, in certain regions, including in the East Asia and the Pacific region, in which we classify both the Philippines as well as Malaysia, you actually see a wide variety of outcomes. And so some countries really being ranked in the top ranks of the report, as well as some countries that lag a little bit behind. And so often that is to do with these different pathways and the extent to which countries have taken advantage of the opportunities to make progress there or not.
So just to hone in a little bit on the case of Malaysia, I'm looking at the performance. We do well on education and health, but not so well in terms of women's participation in politics and in the economy. Is this representative of countries that are not faring so well?
So the case of Malaysia is interesting, actually. As you mentioned, in the educational sphere and in health, Malaysia is performing very well, and is while it has not achieved complete gender parity, it's actually nearly there. Indeed, in political empowerment, the country has still some way to go. So only about 10%, for example, of Malaysia's members of parliament are currently women. And the economic sphere, actually, Malaysia is a country that has made a lot of progress, but that progress had started out historically perhaps from a slightly lower base, and so there's still a way to go here as well. And we see that actually reflected in Malaysia's rankings over the years. So as I mentioned, this is an annual exercise, and this is actually the 11th year that we're measuring this, we're benchmarking this progress towards gender parity. So this year, actually, Malaysia has been rising 5 ranks in the index overall. So that is certainly a good year-on-year progress. However, the country does rank 106th out of 144 countries. And the first time that we actually did this exercise back in 2006, Malaysia was then ranking in 72nd place. So it is a mixed picture here. So, you know, compared to last year, there has been a lot of progress in Malaysia, but perhaps since the start of our index, since the start of that we've been doing this exercise, kind of Malaysia has been moving a bit backwards in the rankings. And actually to give you my analysis of that, it is actually not the case that anything has been kind of significantly going wrong in Malaysia here. It is just that certain other countries have managed to make a lot more progress in less time, and so therefore have moved ahead of Malaysia in the rankings. And so therefore Malaysia kind of finds itself overall at a lower ranking in our index, despite the progress that has also been made in Malaysia. And so the big progress this year has specifically come in the economic sphere. So we've actually, compared to the last time we took these measurements, there has been a big increase in labor force participation of women. So now 52% of Malaysian women are having regular paid jobs, compared to 81% of men. And also, if you look at the professional and technical workers, so skilled and technical work, so the divide here, the split between women and men, is 44% women, 56% men. So that is a relatively equal distribution, and that is certainly very welcome and really means the country is in a good position to take advantage of the full skills of its labor force. So however, if we look at, for example, the more senior levels in Malaysia, so senior executives, senior officials, here only 20%, 22% actually of those roles are held by women. So there seems to have been a lot of progress on the general participation of women in the economy in Malaysia in recent years. But with regard to progression to more senior roles and higher ranks, there's still clearly some way to go here.
You also mentioned that one reason that we might not be doing as well, the whole world as a whole, is because we're still recovering from the financial crisis. Did you see this similar trajectory back in 2008 as well, when the world was recovering from that financial crisis?
So because of the time at which such data becomes available, the data to construct indices such as ours, there's a little bit of a time lag of, you know, typical 2-3 years until you really do see the full results of economic shocks such as the crisis. So therefore, back in 2008, the data was simply not quite there yet to pick it up. But yes, more or less, we especially in the economic sphere, frankly, this economic indicator, we have seen this quite bumpy ride. So there have been a few good years, especially I think the progress in the economic sphere actually peaked in 2013, and that was partly to do with, you know, sort of a post-crisis recovery. But, you know, that clearly now has flattened out a bit. And so also in earlier years, progress there was slower. We're actually, incidentally, what we are also worried about here at the World Economic Forum is that we really believe that over the next 5 to 10 years, there will be a lot of fast technological change and technological progress in many economies around the world, really. Something that our founder and chairman has dubbed the fourth industrial revolution. I believe that is also a discussion you have been very much having in Malaysia as well. So, you know, progress in robotics and automation, in machine learning and so on. And of course, there are many projections that will have a big impact on labor markets as well around the world. And one issue that concerns us very much here is that unless we do more to also make sure that women really take part in the roles and in the kinds of jobs that are expected to thrive in this new technological environment, the going will only get tougher in the economic sphere as well. So, for example, if we look at roles and jobs in science, in engineering, in computer science, and so on, it is often the case around the world still that these fields are quite heavily men-dominated, and not as many women find their way into such careers. And so these are, of course, some of the fields that are expected to really grow very fast in this new economic environment, whereas some of the fields that have historically provided an entry into the formal economy for many women, such as office roles and general white-collar employment, are actually forecast to be affected in a negative way by some of these technological trends. So here again, unless countries are smart about this and actually already plan today for taking advantage of the full range of their potential, so both half of the country's total talent pool of men and women, there will be another economic shock here on the horizon if countries do not prepare for the effects of this fourth industrial revolution.
Mm-hmm. I find it very interesting that you mentioned we should take we should read data like this as a snapshot or a glimpse of how the country has been performing over the past 2 to 3 years. And I was wondering whether there is a link between the problem of income inequality and the gender gap.
Yes, I mean, certainly gender inequality is one specific form of general inequality. Of course, there are others as well. The link between inequality in gender and economic inequality more widely is actually, if you think about it, it's actually quite easy to establish in economic studies, because obviously women do make up half of the population of any country. So therefore, if you do have significant economic disparities there, you know, that will inevitably kind of drag down the overall equality and performance of the country as a whole. And so one thing that I think certainly we are seeing and that we would like to emphasize here is that, of course, you know, a more inclusive growth, a more inclusive economy, including for women, is really also in the self-interest of countries, of governments, of business leaders, because it really makes the best use of all the skills and talent and experience that a country's population has. And, you know, in certainly in this now tougher economic environment that we're finding and around the world, really, and you know, sort of with the rising inequality that we're seeing, really, you know, all as much effort as possible will be needed to make progress and reverse some of these trends.
And finally, when you put together a report like this or index like this, do you hope to see pressure, whether it's through diplomatic pressure or public pressure, to countries that are not doing as well? What's the next steps after the release of a index like this?
Well, we are so, I mean, it is a benchmarking exercise, of course. So the methodology of our index, you know, really also allows countries to compare themselves against themselves, you know, the year before, even 10 years before, right? So therefore, so of course, you know, you sometimes have this kind of effect that, you know, maybe sometimes kind of seeing that your neighbors are doing a little bit better than you, that might actually spur you into action. But, you know, really you can also track your own progress over time. And you know, certainly even regardless of sort of this wider environment, you know, it's as we were just talking about, it really is in every country's interest to make that progress. And I mean, you know, the data that we use is very transparent. It is, you know, if you go to the website of UNESCO, of the World Health Organization, and so on, you can very easily find the data that we compile to present our index. So, you know, there's sort of no mystery here. So really, we also, what we would very much like to do is just to contribute to a much better informed debate on these issues, and so that really, you know, both you know, governments and experts, but also, you know, the public at large, really, like, you know, becomes more aware of actually where their country stands on gender equality.
Tulofo, thank you very much. This has been very enlightening.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I've been speaking to Tu Leopold, Project Lead of Education, Gender and Work System Initiative at the World Economic Forum. We've been talking about the World Economic Forum Global Gender Gap Report 2016. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.